Continuing with our analysis of President Trump's speech from this past week, we turn to the topic of energy and climate. Now, while many environmentalists may be discouraged by what they heard, the plans and priorities presented by the president, I believe, foretell a greater domestic energy production at lower consumer costs and job creation, rather than trying to build an energy infrastructure on the theory of global warming. Here with his analysis of President Trump's speech is the executive director of the International Climate Science Coalition. He's also an advisor to the Heartland Institute, Tom Harris. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for having me on.
And a couple of websites, of course, we have them linked over to our page, climatescienceinternational.net and heartland.org. And, well, pretty much like I said in the introduction, Tom, when you think about the final speeches of Barack Obama to the nation, to the joint sessions of Congress, and the first one by President Trump, when it comes to energy creation and what are we going to rely on, tradition and the proven, or take a throw of the dice with the theory and bowing to global warming, quite a transposition.
That's right. I mean, Obama was saying climate change was the greatest threat to humankind, and we had to reduce CO2 emissions. And, of course, that was through his clean power plan, among other things, which was getting rid of your least expensive source of power, which is, of course, coal. So I was very happy, actually, to hear President Trump say that he was going to stop the regulation threatens the future and livelihood of our great coal miners, is the way he put it. And, of course, what he's referring to is the so-called Clean Power Plan, which is actually misnamed. They call it clean because they say they're getting rid of carbon pollution. But what they're talking about, of course, is carbon dioxide, which is the opposite of pollution. I mean, this is like something out of 1984 where they said war is peace. I mean, calling carbon dioxide pollution is quite dishonest. And the previous EPA administrator, I mean, she did that all the time instead of calling it carbon dioxide. And, of course, it's just a trick because if you say carbon pollution, that sounds dark and dirty, you know, like soot. But, in fact, it's invisible and it's plant food.
Yes, that you're referring to the ever infamous in New Jersey, at least Lisa Jackson, who was also the head of the Department of Environmental Protection here in New Jersey, whose grand idea when it came to an overpopulation of bear was spending $1 million to teach people how to put their garbage out.
Yeah, exactly. And yet New Jersey is a good example as to how the extreme weather records are not being set on a statewide record or basis. I'll send you the link, actually, to the database on the NOAA.gov website. Maximum temperature for New Jersey was 110 degrees on July 10th, 1936. Okay, minimum temperature was 1904, maximum snowfall was 1915, maximum snow depth 1961. I mean, there are no records being set recently in New Jersey. And if you actually look at the whole list of 50 states at all the records, you know, it's a lot of records, you know, about 5 or 7 records per state. There wasn't a single record set anywhere in the U.S. in 2016, none set in 2015. You have to go back to the 1930s to find when regular records are being set.
Does it sound like, I mean, President Trump during the campaign, as well as in his speech and some of the things he said, he understands that the environment is obviously fragile, but that he also understands that the environment works in a circular fashion where there are highs and lows, much like a stock chart, I guess. Maybe that's why he understands it better than the previous occupant does, but that there are things you can do and need to do to maintain. But there's sensible ideas that should take priority over boondoggles that we've seen over the past 8 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, two things. First, he called for sensible programs to promote clean air and clean water. Okay, and that's, of course, the kind of thing that the Environmental Protection Agency was created for. They weren't created to try to control climate in the year 2080. I mean, that's become their hijacked agenda. But indeed, that's what he's calling for, and it makes sense, promoting clean air and clean water. And also, he wants to see approved legislation for a $1 trillion investment in the infrastructure. And that's really, really important. I mean, that's part of the adaptation to extreme weather and climate change that are, you know, parts of the natural cycles on Earth. And a really good example, Chris, as to how you can actually harden your society to extreme weather, happened during Hurricane Sandy in New York. There were parts of Manhattan that did not lose electricity or internet or any cable connection because their cables were buried underground. Okay, now that's an example of how you adapt to extreme weather and natural climate variability. Here in Canada, you know, we've had a number of power outages in eastern Canada because we have all these cables all above ground, and it's not long after an ice storm, which we may be getting later today at the rate things are going, that you lose your power, you know? And so, I mean, that's crazy. They say, oh, well, we can't afford it. Well, yeah, but they can afford to try to control climate in the year 2080. Right now around the world, $1 billion a day is being spent trying to control the climate. Imagine what that could do to helping build your infrastructure.
Talking with Tom Harris, who's Executive Director of the International Climate Science Coalition, also advisor with the Heartland Institute, climatescienceinternational.net and heartland.org. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You mentioned about the idea of what's the $1 trillion invested in the infrastructure can create if you just take the regulations off the energy industry and give them the permission to do what capitalism and the entrepreneurial idea does. You see things like the Keystone Pipeline come to fruition. You'll see the coal industry revitalized, and you'll see jobs get created.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the bottom line is the United States has an enormous advantage over Europe, for example, because of your cheap electricity. And that's largely because of coal. I mean, coal used to be more than half of your electricity. It's now down to about 33%. It's kind of interesting to see what's happening in New Jersey on that. I'll just pull up the stats here. New Jersey actually gets only 3% of its electricity from coal. Now, remember, coal is the cheapest form of power unless you put tons of regulations on it. And as a consequence, your state has the ninth highest electricity prices in the United States. So, you know, when you get, and I'll give you just one quick example. If you were to actually follow Obama's plans, you would get in the U.S. what we got here in Ontario. In Ontario, Canada, we had 25% of our electricity from coal back in 2003. And what happened is the government decided we were going to lead the world on climate change and set an example to everybody, even though, of course, we're only one half of 1% of world emissions. We were going to lead the world. So they got rid of coal, and last year, for the first time, they had 0% coal, and that was the primary reason that our electricity rates have gone up. Get this. 318%, okay, 318% since the time when we had a quarter of our power from coal. And so we've actually, you know, largely ruined our economy. That's going to be one of the topics that is going to be presented by an economist at the Heartland Institute's conference on March 23rd. And people can log in to heartland.org and they can watch the conference online. It's going to be a big conference in Washington, D.C. at the Hyatt Hotel on the 23rd and the 24th. And they'll bring in economists and engineers and also scientists to talk about really Trump's side of the climate debate, you know, that we should focus on building the country and, of course, you know, promoting clean air and clean water, but not trying to stop climate change.
Yeah, I mean, just look around the weather we've seen just in North America the last couple of weeks, never mind last couple of years. Can you honestly say with the forces of these storms that we see that mankind has any chance of influencing or changing the strength of Mother Nature?
Not really. I mean, we do locally around cities. We actually cause urban heat islands where it's warmer because, you know, when you cut down a forest and you put up a parking lot, that's going to change local climate. And if you integrate that over the whole planet, we probably have some effect. But, you know, the idea that we can control the climate, that we're the primary drivers of climate change, that doesn't make any sense.
We've been joined this morning by the Executive Director of the International Climate Science Coalition. He's also an advisor with the Heartland Institute. Two sources to go for the facts of this issue is climatescienceinternational.net as well as heartland.org. And, yes, we have the links over to our page. Tom Harris, thanks so much for the education this morning. Thanks for being here.
Okay, thank you, Chris.